Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
It's everything you ever wanted to know about movie trailers, how they're made, and how they manipulate you into craving upcoming films.
We're getting the lowdown from the creative director of one of the premier movie trailer production companies.
Plus, Riz Ahmed, a.k.a. Riz MC, a.k.a. Amita's husband, takes over the big sell right now on Inside Pop. In a world where two television producers, Amita Patel and Sean David Johnson, also host a podcast about pop culture.
Finally comes a time where they devote an episode to revealing everything you've ever wanted to know about movie trailers.
Ooh, I got chills right there, Amita. That was very really dramatic. Yeah.
I want to read trailer scripts from now on.
Let's make that our side job.
Yeah.
So we have a very informative interview all about movie trailers coming up. But first, we want to let you know that you can subscribe to Inside Pop, catch all of our old episodes, and make sure you catch all of the new episodes by heading to iTunes and giving our show a rating and review. We appreciate that very much because it lets other people know how much you like our show and it gets our show in front of them. So a quick trip to iTunes, quick rating, a quick review, and you've done your good deed for the month.
For almost as long as movies have existed. Okay, I'm still doing the trailer voice. But for almost as long as movies have existed, movie trailers have been created to get audiences excited to see upcoming films.
And over the years, these trailers have become more than just advertisements. When they're really well done, I think that they can be works of art in their own right.
Sean had the privilege to speak with the creative director of Aspect, a Los Angeles-based production company that has produced trailers for 40 years. You'll find out about trailer trends over the years, why sometimes you see shots in trailers that aren't in the movie, and also why you may have felt that certain trailers give away too much of the film's plot.
Nadi Bronstein, co-president and creative director of Aspect, thank you so much for joining us on Inside Pop.
That is such a long-ass title, but yes, hi.
Well earned, I'm sure. Well earned. Nadi, I'm so excited to have you here. Both my co-host Amita and I are huge pop culture fans, and we primarily work in television, but we love film, and we've always been just personally fascinated with how trailers are put together and how they are created and who creates them. So I'm so excited to have you on representing your company Aspect to tell us all about that.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm all about anticipation. So the thing I love most about trailers is that they force me and they manipulate me to anticipate all of these great movies that all of the movies that you hope are great, that will eventually be great that are coming out. So can we just start off and can you tell me what you and the fine people at Aspect do?
Absolutely. We team up with studios, and we help them create marketing materials for their campaigns. We specifically focus on teasers, trailers, TV campaigns, and Aspect's been around for quite some time, and so trailers for film has always been the bread and butter of this company, but over the last few years, it's also obviously expanded to streaming and broadcast.
And I think a lot of pop culture fans would be very interested and maybe surprised to learn that there is a company like yours dedicated to that. So it's not just, I think some people might think, oh, the director who directed the film is also directing the trailer, or the studio that put out the film is creating the trailer, but it's actually a collaboration.
Yeah. That was me too. Like back in the day, when I was just a kid dreaming about working in trailers, that was my assumption, that the filmmakers put it together. And I had no idea that there was this giant industry built around just that part of the campaign. But yeah, there's many of us, and it's a very competitive industry. But yes, ultimately we team up with the studio and then with the filmmakers to a lesser degree to help them develop a film, a campaign for their films.
How much input does a director have on what the trailer ends up looking like?
Honestly, that it depends on who the director is. Some directors just don't really want to be super involved. Others are really into the marketing materials and they really want to have their hands in it. But the filmmakers are absolutely always part of the process. The studios, for the most part, really like making sure their filmmakers feel like we are honoring their vision. And we mm-hmm. keep that in mind, obviously, when we create our materials. We want to honor and respect the film. We don't want to in any way step on anyone's toes. And we want to make sure that the filmmaker's vision comes through.
So I'm assuming, and I think everyone's going to be jealous about this, that you get to see these films months before they're released.
Yeah, sometimes more than months. Sometimes it's over a year before. Yeah. Yeah. And wow. I mean, so on the one hand, that's super fun and awesome, but we get to see it in a very initial state. Sometimes it's just a script. Sometimes it's just footage directly from the set. So, you know, and rough assemblies with no special effects, which does take away a little bit of the final experience. And it is always interesting to watch the movie once it's finished compared to our experience earlier on and how different. Once all the special effects and the music and mixing are all in there, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, and your company creates trailers for a good number of action films, superhero flicks, mm-hmm. heavily CGI movies. So I guess you get to see, you know, Chris Hemsworth just running around on a big green stage without, you know, lightning bolt shooting around.
Yeah, and we also do a lot of animation, which is also a completely different challenge because animation is always developed. It's not, you know, when you work on a live action film, the footage is the footage, and then they could do reshoots, but you know, it kind of is what it is. Animation, they're always tweaking, and they could always change lines, and they could change camera angles. So that's a whole other ball of awesomeness. But that's part of the fun, honestly, is trying to create stuff out of all these raw materials.
So every once in a while, I think I'm like relatively eagle-eyed about these things. Every once in a while, Nadi, I will see a moment, an image, a shot in a trailer, and then I'll see the movie and I'm like, wait a second, that wasn't in the movie, but I saw that in the trailer. Is that because you're dealing with cuts that are so that are so early?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, again, like, so we're dealing with materials when the filmmakers are still just starting to put together their vision. And again, every project's different, and some filmmakers have a much more, strong vision from the get-go. They know exactly what they want their film to look like. Others develop it over time. So we do what the best we can to use materials that we believe are going to make it into the film. But sometimes last minute they make changes, or over the course of the months they make changes. We don't like doing that. We don't like putting stuff out that feels like, you know, is not. It feels cheating a little bit, but it happens. Yeah,
it happens. And are there any times, conversely, are there any times where a studio or a director might say, you cannot show this?
Oh,
this
absolutely.
Cannot go in the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's because that's a consideration as well. We want to make sure that the filmmaker's idea of what he wants the experience in the theater to be, to not be spoiled. So absolutely, yes, there's you can't show that shot or that joke or that line or that entire, we never want to see this character look this way in the marketing materials. Absolutely.
Okay, interesting. I know one of the films I'm very excited to see this December is Aquaman, and your team created the theatrical TV spots for that. So the TV spots for the theatrical release for that.
Yeah.
And one thing that was interesting to me was that you do show him in that iconic uniform. And I'm imagining that was some kind of decision. Like, will we show him like that in the TV spot?
Yeah. So honestly, we're not part of the decision process on that level. That is something the studio on their own decides how they feel comfortable revealing that information, and they have their own strategy. And sometimes we're privy to it, sometimes not so much. But we take our cues from the studio. So that's not really – I can't explain the strategy behind that really because I'm not part of that. But yeah, they felt like that was something that they would like to put out into the world. They want to make sure people understand that it looks that way for their reasons. And so, yeah. So – but, you know, again, every project's different. So I can't even go into too much into the whys of it because every particular project is a whole different – set of challenges and concerns.
I would love just to talk to you a little bit about the beginning. How is a trailer put together?
Ideally we come on very, very early on in the campaign and there's many, many shops. We could go into that if you want, it's a highly competitive industry. And normally when we're cutting on something, we're competing with 2 to 3 to 4, sometimes 7 other shops all working on the same campaign. So ideally the studio will bring us on early on. We'll get a script or we'll start getting dailies, dailies, which are footage that come on a daily basis from the set. Or it depends. Like sometimes the studio waits until they have an assembly, like the first rough cut from the filmmaker. Sometimes they want to start there. And then we get a brief from our studio executive who kind of shares their general idea of what they think they want this campaign to look like. Early on, it's still in development. We are part of the process. We're part of the kind of testing to see what this is going to look like. And so that's the most fun part, is the super collaborative kind of all of us sitting together. Brainstorming ideas. On my team, I like doing big brainstorms, bringing in a lot of people into the room. We all look at the material, we talk about it, we throw a lot of ideas up on the whiteboard, sometimes really crazy ones, and we start developing the tone. What do we think is important? Story element. What's the big idea? What's the big takeaway for this film? And then we have various departments that all kind of work together and to create the final or the first cut of the teaser, rather. We have our writers, copywriters, who help us develop the copy that you see on screen, or if there's some kind of voiceover, or if we want the character to say something that they don't say in the movie that we need in order to create a teaser sometimes, or a trailer. We have our graphics department who create the beautiful main titles and all the cards in between. We have our music department who helps us find that piece of music. Often recently we've been creating custom pieces of music where we'll take an existing song and augment it or remix it or rethink it. There's also a lot of companies out in the industry that are solely music companies, composers that create music for trailers, marketing, and they also kind of expand into film and TV. But we have relationships with these companies, so we could actually reach out and say, hey, we're working on such and such project. We want you to create a cue just for us. And then we could work on it together with them to develop it over time to work with our cut better. And then finally, there's the editor, who is the mastermind who has to put it all together and collaborate with all these different departments to make sure there's one cohesive vision. My role as creative director is to basically overlook the entire process and make sure we're all working together and developing a cohesive vision. And often we'll send 2 to 3 different approaches, sometimes even 4 different trailers, if we feel like there's a variety of ideas that we want to explore. And then the studio receives their cuts from all the different shops and agencies that are on the project. And then there's a long process of whittling it down to the ones that they feel are stronger, There's many versions of revisions that keep happening over time because we either the studio wants us to make a finer point, or the filmmakers want to make a finer point about something, or they don't like the music that we're using or graphic, whatever it may be. It's a long process. Sometimes there's testing. That depends on the strategy on the studio side, where they actually do focus groups and they see which pieces audiences respond to. And then finally, there's that call where you won and your trailer goes through the finishing process, which is we send it to another shop that their job is basically to take the final materials, put them all together. We go to a mix, and then it's shared with the world.
That's amazing. That's an intense audition process. I mean, yeah. I think that we, like, you know, it's TV and film, it's such a heartbreaking business. But I mean, I think about pilots I've worked on that I've got to put so much time and energy into, and they don't get picked up. You, it seems like you deal with that, or potentially deal with that, all the time.
You know, we talk a lot about that here. You know, remaining kind of resilient in the face of, because we pour our heart and souls into everything we do. We're a team of creative people who are really passionate about what we do. And so it is heartbreaking when this thing that you've worked on for weeks and weeks, or sometimes months, doesn't make it out into the world. So you know, we internally, and this is something I could say about our company, is we try to make the process the best we can, so that even if we don't make it to the end, the win is how we operate. It's that old kind of adage of it's not the destination, it's the journey. We try and make the journey as collaborative, as rewarding, as satisfying as we can, so that we could pick ourselves up and try again when our work doesn't go all the way.
Well, I think when you're dealing with something that requires creativity and artistry, that is something that's not just words, but it's actually an experience that you can have, where you're actually just creating something that's as effective and beautiful as possible. So I think music plays a large part in that.
Absolutely.
So I think that it's sometimes the first thing that you hear when a trailer begins. And your team created the teaser trailer and full trailer for Mary Poppins. And I think that is, I told you offline that a friend of mine actually cried the first time she saw the trailer. So that's good awesome. Job. I made my friend cry.
It's been really interesting for us. We actually do go online sometimes, and I know there are editors who scour the internet to look for comments and reaction videos. And it's pretty amazing to see how so many people dissect these trailers and break them apart and look at every frame to try and guess what the movie is going to be, and see if we're trying to hint at something. And sometimes we are, and sometimes we're not. And it's pretty amazing to watch, like, how people come up with stories of, like, what this might mean. And we just, like, put the shot in there because it's cool. So that's the fun part.
Sometimes it's just cool, right?
Yeah.
So for Mary Poppins, here's a really broad question, but what were the challenges or goals of creating the trailer for, like, this movie that has such nostalgia connected to it and such anticipation?
I mean, these kinds of projects, it's always a fine line, and nowadays there's a lot of these kind of rebooty, remakey, sequely kind of films. So it's a fine line of what's new, but also being respectful and tipping your hat at the original material to make sure fans don't feel like you're betraying anything that is sacred to them. And studios have been really good recently about that, about creating films that do that don't ruin anything. They don't break the original, but they add to it in a way that feels modern and fresh. And so that's something that's the same fine line that we have to ride in marketing, is to make sure that it's appealing to new audiences. It's appealing to people who might not have seen the original, or don't, you know, care about the original, or sometimes not even aware of the original, but also make sure that the fans or people who are aware of it get excited as well and feel like this will be for them too. So that's always a fine line to play.
One thing that I really loved about the Mary Poppins trailer is how you take your time. You know, you don't see Mary Poppins until 30 or 40 seconds into the trailer. And, you know, I think in a world where it's fast paced and you've got to grab attention really quickly, I love how this trailer just takes its time to introduce so many of the elements.
Yeah, I mean, something that's really important in trailers is tone and build. And so that's a perfect example of it where, you know, nowadays most people watch trailers online anyway, so they know what they're going to see. It's not like back in the day when you'd sit in a theater and you're kind of like wondering, what is this? Nowadays, usually it's on YouTube and it says Mary Poppins trailer right above there. So we don't do quite as many of those kind of rug pull opens where it looks like it might be one thing and then it's something else. But if you could build anticipation, and a lot of editorial on trailers is about that tension, building tension and then delivering an awesome moment. And so, yeah, that's a great example of that.
Yeah, and I remember when I first saw the teaser, you know, I felt that pacing and the building of that anticipation. And I remember thinking, you better show me Emily Blunt as Mary Poppins. If you don't show that to me, I'm gonna, and you did at the very end. It is a great shot.
I'm sure you remember back in the day when studios would release, this is before my time in this industry, where they'd release a teaser that didn't show anything, where it was just a title reveal. And you're like, what the heck? I want to see show me Spider-Man. Like, don't just say that right, Spider-Man's right. going to come. Yeah, no, that doesn't happen anymore.
So speaking of that, I feel like there have been trends in trailers. I've heard actually over the years, I think in different phases, some fans complaining that trailers gave away too much of the plot. And we were just talking about times where trailers didn't give enough information. How aware are you of that feeling when you're working with a studio to create specific trailers?
Everybody in this industry is extremely aware. It's the first thing everyone tells you when they hear what you do is, why do you give away everything? And and the truth is, that's not at all obviously our goal, and that's not anything that we set off as a strategy. And that's the studios don't do that either. And I feel like, by the way, that is like an unfair statement to make nowadays, because I don't feel like trailers do that anymore. It used to be. I remember when I was a kid watching a trailer, I'd be like, oh, that's the full three acts of the movie. That's great. I kind of get the whole story here. For the most part, that's not the case anymore. We try and give enough stories so that you get context. You get why do I go see this film? What is it about this that is interesting? And that's about it. That's really what you need is just a little bit. I mean, and honestly, there are some films where all you need to do is just show me some visuals and I'm in. Others, you need to give me a little more of a reason why. And so, you know, the trailers that do kind of feel a little more hold me by the hand and give me the whole story, usually that's something that develops over time with testing, where we, and when I say we, it's the studio together with us, realize that we need that extra little story beat in order to make sure that people understand why they should go see this one.
Are there certain genres that you find benefit more from oblique trailers, where it's definitely less handholding and more of just that kind of general, this is the tone, this is the look?
That's a great question. It depends so much on the project, right? I mean, we've all seen that really unique teaser or trailer that is very minimal, and that's mostly because the film itself has such rich visuals or sound design or something, or an idea that is so simple and easy, you know, to kind of get through in a minimal teaser. Sometimes you need more. Also, if it's an existing property that people are already excited about, it's a lot easier to get people excited. Like, you know, the Spider-Man example from like the early 2000s, I think it was 2001. That's the perfect example for me personally. I was just so stoked to see anything. So you didn't need to tell me much beyond the fact that it's coming to theaters. So it really is. It's more, it's not, I don't think it's genre based. I think it's more film based.
It's interesting. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but one of the trailers that your team also created for The Conjuring, which I think is one of my favorite horror films of all time, definitely one of my favorite horror films of the past 10 years. And that I guess that movie came out when a ton of other horror films were coming out. But I think that trailer was so powerful and so good. It made me say, okay, out of all the other movies coming out, I'm going to go see this one. And and I thought it was just so well done. And I think, you know, the moment that really got me was, you know, that close-up of Lily Taylor's face and then the hand clapping behind her head. Oh, my God. You know, I remember seeing it in a movie theater and everyone screamed. You know, I can imagine the conversations that happened with something like that where you need to cut through the competition of all the other types of films like yours coming out. And maybe you are giving away one of the big scares of the movie, but you need to take that bet to grab everyone's attention.
Yeah, I think one of the bigger challenges that we face is why, right? Why would you get off your couch where you have access nowadays to streaming services and all this amazing content and buy a ticket and sometimes get a babysitter? It's a whole night out. Why go see this? What is different about this film? And horror is a great example where, yes, you do need to tell me what's the difference between this horror film and every other horror film I've seen. And usually it is somewhere around the scare. A great example from, I think it was last year, was Lights Out, where all I needed to see was the concept that the lights are on, there's nobody there, lights are off, there's a monster. Right there, I got it. You don't need to tell me much more than that. I get it, and I know why that's terrifying. And if I'm a horror fan, I'm in. And so that campaign was really around that one idea. You didn't need to go into the legend of it or the backstory or the context of who the characters are. Who cares? That's it. That's all you need. So The Conjuring is a perfect example. Right. Yeah. That one scare was enough to say, yes, I'm in. This is different.
Well, speaking of The Conjuring, directed by James Wan, who is now directing one of the biggest, most highly anticipated films of the year, Aquaman, and you guys also created TV spots for that. What were some of your creative challenges and intentions for this campaign?
Again, as it's a campaign in development, and it's still, you know, we're still mucking around in it. So, specifically. What we do is we work again with the executive at the studio to try and figure out what makes this superhero more interesting than the others, and then we look at the context of what are the films that have come out in this genre recently, in this specific universe, and how do we frame this superhero in a way that is appealing to the broadest audience. And the thing about superhero movies is there is a core fan base that is extremely passionate and looks for the details, like you mentioned, of the suit and, oh, they're going to do this and, oh, they have that character. And but so we want to make sure that the fan base feels, respected, and they feel like they're going to see what they've imagined reading the comic book when they were kids on screen. But then we want to make sure that everybody else can come and have a great, fun time at the movies. This specific movie, that's our big kind of goal, is to make it as broad and fun as the movie actually is. We're trying to capture how awesome it is and share that with the world.
I think, unlike the Mary Poppins trailer, the TV spots I watched, You do such a great job of, in just seconds, delivering so much information, right? Like, in the first 10 seconds, I know that it's that same character that I liked from Justice League. I know there's humor in it. I know that there are women who actually get to speak in it, which sometimes doesn't happen in superhero movies. So, like, I think, like, in 10 seconds, you give me all of that plus some action. So that seems to be kind of a different style.
Yeah, and nowadays also, because a lot of our materials go online rather than on just the TV. Like, back in the day, before social media was quite as monolithic or massive as it is nowadays, you know, we had 30 seconds to kind of capture you between, you know, in between other commercials or in between watching your favorite show. So you're kind of a captive audience there. Online on Instagram and Facebook and all these social media platforms, the attention span is so much shorter and the opportunity to grab the viewer is so much more challenging that we have to pack a lot early on to make sure that you are interested to stick around for 15, 30 seconds and really kind of go on the ride with us. And that's a whole different world. But yes, we try and very quickly, very early on set up, here are the important elements here. Here's the tone. Here's the feel. And then we can tell you some more story.
What is the percentage of people who will see your work, one of your trailers, on their phones versus in a movie theater?
It's pretty high. I think it was about 80% of people will watch trailers not in a theatrical experience, which is very interesting. We used to cut trailers assuming you're in the dark room with the popcorn on your lap, already excited to see a movie, and realizing that now our audience is not doing that. And as I said earlier, we can't do that little tease of what this might be because you already know what it is because you clicked a link to get to it most of the time.
Right.
And then the other challenge that we're finding now is most audiences, a really high percentage as well, are not watching things with audio turned on. So, which is such a major element of the experience of a trailer and an experience of these things, as you mentioned, music. And obviously for horror, you want to create attention, and sound design is a huge element there. So we have to find ways to either capture the audience to turn their audio on and encourage them to do that, or live in a world where there is no audio and then make sure that visually we kind of carry through. And you'll see a lot now where there's subtitles on trailers, and we try and even make that more interesting than just those little white words on the bottom of the screen so that it's a little more dynamic and a little more interesting.
Yeah, I remember one of the last shows I produced, they put a lot of spots up on Instagram, and I saw those subtitles, and of course I was being very precious about it, and I was like, oh, the beautiful images I created, why are you putting words over that? And someone explained to me that people don't always turn on their audio, and you've got to just, again, hold their hand and take them through this and get them excited.
You know, the funny thing is I was shocked when people told me that. Like yourself, you seem like you were kind of like, wait, what? Really?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But then I thought for 30 seconds and I was like, wait, that's exactly how I am when I'm on it. I never have audio up on Instagram when I'm scrolling through it because I'm usually not in a place where I want to have audio on. I'm either like trying to fall asleep or watching another show, which is kind of sad too. But yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess another interesting thing about digital is, right, it's you're in control, as you were saying. So in a movie theater, you probably have to sit through five or six or more trailers, whereas you kind of have that control and also the ability to stop at any time, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm 4 seconds in because I have a short attention span because it's 2018 and I'm a millennial, right? So you have to fight against that as well.
Yeah, and you know, right now when we cut a trailer, we can't. I mean, there's so much that we're putting into just trying to figure out tone and story and all that. We don't consider every single little way that people will experience the trailer. We try and make it as broad as we can so that it works in theaters, it works on phones, it works on your laptop. There might be a day where we make different pieces of content for different areas that are very specific so that we combat the stop in the middle for some pieces, but others we don't worry about it as much. I can totally see that coming.
So Aspect has created trailers for some of the most anticipated films of this very busy movie season, Mary Poppins, Aquaman. Can you just talk about some of the other trailers you've created for movies coming out this season?
We had a teaser for a horror movie called La Llorona coming out next year, which is we're very excited about. How to Train Your Dragon 3 is a very special project for me. I've worked on all three now, and Aspect has before me also worked on the first one. So that one's a big one for us. Trying to think what, well, and obviously there's a bunch of projects that we can't talk about yet.
Right.
That we're nearing that finish line or are in development and still competing with other people. But yeah, those are kind of the big ones, I think, right now.
I imagine that you've signed so many NDAs in your time at Aspect because you get to see all of these major films before anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, everyone here is NDA'd up the wangster, and our shop is under a lot of MPAA. They keep coming around to make sure that we're secure and everything's buttoned up and all our systems are very secure. Yeah, absolutely, because we do have a lot of materials here that are sensitive.
Well, your website is amazing. I mean, it was great for me to actually do research for this interview. It's not just examples of your work, but in so many ways, it just feels like the history, the visual history of trailers, because you have been at it for 40 years. So just classic trailers, Men in Black and Armageddon. And I mean, it goes even further back than that.
Yeah, when I came to Aspect, I actually didn't realize, I've only been here 5 years at this point. I didn't realize how rich the history was, and there was just one day I was kind of digging through our files, and I started finding all these older trailers, and one of the editors was telling me about it, and it was kind of humbling and amazing to watch these trailers that I remember as a kid sitting in a theater, being inspired by, and saying one day I want to make a trailer, and then to work here at the shop that, yeah, we have, like, Forrest Gump was made here, that trailer, and wow. The Rock, trailers that I remember that, again, inspired me to want to do this, and so, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And Aspect 40 years ago was a tiny little shop that was just starting to develop what trailers even were, because back in the late 70s, that's where trailers started. You mentioned this in our conversation before this, that trailers are called trailers because they came after the movies. And if you could find it, this is one of my favorites. It's the original trailer for Citizen Kane is basically a mic and Orson Welles telling the audience about his movie that he made. And it cuts to different scenes from the movie. It's a long-ass trailer. And it's just it goes to show how much this medium has developed. The late 70s, when Aspect started, is kind of when the blockbusters started becoming a thing and trailers became more and more important. So, yes, as you say, like, if you look through our history, you kind of get to see the history of trailers and how different fads come and go. And this is completely unofficial, but there's a few editors who worked here who claim that Aspect invented the button. The button is that extra joke or extra moment that happens after the main title of a trailer. And they claim that they developed it here, that the aspect is responsible for the invention of the button. I can't confirm that because there's no way to, but that's a fun little tidbit there.
Well, that's a real gift because that's such a nice, I mean, talk about anticipation, right? Like that, it's such a nice way to surprise people and to make them anticipate that. So that's great. Let's give Aspect credit for that. I believe it.
I mean, a lot of trailer making is all about that kind of, as I mentioned before, tension building, and there's something almost intuitive to it that I think a lot of us just kind of, all of us feel when it feels right and when it feels wrong. And I'm sure there's a science to it, but our guys do it more from a place of artistry and gut.
And you can feel that. You can feel that. Yeah. It's I think Aspect, you see the history of the trailers, but then it's also just the history of pop culture as well. So thank you very much for the great work that your team does. And thank you so much for joining us on Inside Pop.
Thank you, Sean. It was really nice.
So what an amazing interview. I learned so much. Thank you, Nadi, for having such a great conversation with Sean about your work. So, Sean, what was the most interesting thing that you learned about making trailers from your conversation?
Well, yeah, and again, I really appreciate Nadi. I mean, he's got multi-million-dollar films. The pressure of, marketing those properly, sharing that pressure, it's a lot. So I appreciate that he took the time out for this conversation. I think one of the things that was interesting to me is And it shouldn't have been a surprise, but just like in TV, when we're producing long form shows, I think in almost all types of media, it's all about collaboration. So the fact that he has a staff of editors and music composers, and they're collaborating, and then they're collaborating with the studio, who most often is collaborating with the film's production team. So just kind of that collaborative aspect, all of that energy going into 10, 20, 60 second trailers, that was really interesting to me. And then also, when I was researching for the interview, I analyzed trailers very, very, very closely. And it was really astounding to me how much information and feeling and tone they can put into the first 3 seconds of a trailer, into the first 10 seconds of the trailer. So just like, I mean, I think that's a real skill to just dump and grab attention and like just say a lot in a very, very, very short amount of time.
Definitely, definitely. It makes me, you know, think about trailers in such a different way. And you know, I knew obviously a lot of work went into it, but I think two of the most interesting things that I, you know, gathered from Nadi's knowledge is I was so shocked, and I think you were shocked as well. I could hear when you were talking to him about it, that they do all this work, and it's not guaranteed that the trailer actually lives to see, you know, an audience, because it's a bid, you know, and they compete against other companies. I was like, what? You do all of this work? It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But I mean, you can see why a movie studio would like that, right? The very, very, very best companies competing and putting forth their very, very best ideas. And then you select the one that you like the most. So great for the movie studios, but I'm sure it's gut-wrenching for all the people competing.
Yeah. And then I love that this is the company that created the button, or may have created the button. It's not totally admitting that, but I'd like to think so. I love a good button.
You do love a good button, because longtime listeners of our podcast may recall that we don't really do it that much anymore, but we used to put on little buttons after our theme music, and that's all Amita. She loves a good button.
I love a good button. I know. Why aren't we doing this? Are we not having as much fun that we don't have button fodder? We need some button.
Button. Hashtag bring back the button. That's what you're trying to do right now.
I am. Well, thank you again for that interview, Sean. It was definitely enlightening.
You are welcome. And make sure to visit our show notes on insidepoppodcast.com. We will have links to the Aspect Twitter feed, their Instagram feed, and most importantly, their website. It's an amazing. It's every single trailer you've loved over the past 40 years on this website. So it's a really special place to visit. So we'll have all that information in our show notes.
And we'll be back to discuss the new Riz MC single in The Big Cell after these two short messages.
How does this sound? A weekend on a beautiful mountaintop in California. You wake up, eat a tasty meal with some new friends, some old friends, maybe the host of your favorite podcasts. After that, it's a couple of inspiring classes, spectacular podcast tapings, a hilarious stand-up showcase, a dance party, and more. And s'mores! All of this can be yours at Max FunCon, returning to Lake Arrowhead next June. Tickets go on sale Friday, November 23rd. Put that on your calendar, because Max FunCon tickets always sell out. Get a head start planning your next summer vacation and go to maxfuncon.com to learn more.
You never know who you'll run into in Fairhaven, the city under the bubble.
Allison Becker.
Eliza Skinner.
Keith Powell.
Mucus-drenched imp monsters.
Rob Corddry.
Christelle Alonso. Judy Greer.
Grotesquely possessive carnivorous plants.
Justin McElroy.
Travis McElroy.
Griffin McElroy.
Terrifying, malevolent, sentient beards.
John Hodgman.
Paul F. Tompkins.
Lisa Loeb.
Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Cell. Of course, it's the segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other. And then that other listens, reads, watches, experiences, lets those experiences gestate and they form an opinion. And then they return to share their feelings about said Big Cell. Last week, Amita Big Sold Me, Riz MC, also known as Riz Ahmed, the amazing actor, and for my co-host, an incredible heartthrob, but an immense talent by any name. And he released a new single and video. And trust me, Amita, we're going to talk about the video also.
Yes!
called Mogambo. And I had no idea. This is why I appreciate my co-host, and I appreciate the show, and I appreciate the segment, because I get to stay up to date on important things in pop culture, like this new single. So, and video. So let me just start out by saying that I really, like, I like his rhythm. I like how quickly he raps, but I can still hear the words. I think he's great. I think he's a great MC. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. And I like the song a lot. I like the beat. But what I really love is everything surround, like the ideas and the messages in the song. And then you compare it to the video, and that actually elevates it even more. So I like it all. So before I give my rating, I'd love to just, talk a little bit about it with you.
Yes, let's definitely talk about it. So if you aren't familiar with Riz MC and his group, the Sweatshop Boys, you know, I think they always took an approach to music and to lyrics, for the most part, really making a statement of some sort, really talking about their experience. And you don't get the sometimes typical stereotypical, you know, talking about women and money with these guys, with Sweatshop Boys. And Riz's, you know, solo effort here is also something that comes from him that he's passionate about. And he has always tried to give voice to his culture. He's Pakistani, and he, you know, I think he's been very outspoken about being pigeonholed into being thought of as a terrorist and being judged by the color of his skin. And this is a single that is like an anthem about that.
Yeah, and yeah, I think that's great too. And I think it's all like, so, and that's amazing. I think he's also willing to say some things that maybe not controversial, but things that like very strong statements. Mm-hmm. There's a lyric that I'll just paraphrase because I don't have it exactly in front of me, but where he just talks about, you know, it's going to be a brown world, where he basically said, I mean, which really made me think about what, 25 years ago when Public Enemy had their album called Fear of a Black Planet. And just by that mm-hmm. statement, it's like, yeah, get used to it. And he's kind of saying the same thing. It's like, guess what? It one day will eventually be a brown world. And I think I like this, like he just makes statements like that, which are true mm-hmm. and strong and empowering. So, yeah, he's definitely woke and he's got the skills to make it all stick. And then the video I loved. And I mean, you might be thinking I'm just going to talk about how it's 3 minutes of hot dudes rubbing on each other. But listen, I'm going to say this. So basically, I think it's a video where It's shot very documentary style, but assuming that it's some type of very traditional Pakistani wrestling where guys put on really tight shorts and then they have to massage each other first to be limber and then they wrestle. Mm-hmm. So yes, kind of erotic, but this is what I love about the video. I love that, first of all, this straight MC has made his new single like this kind of homage to the beauty of the male Pakistani body. That's really cool. Cause it is. I feel like it's an homage to Pakistani male Pakistani strength, right, and confidence, but also it's like an homage to like the beauty of their bodies. And I think that's such a cool thing for a straight MC to do.
Definitely. And I think I had read an article that the director had said they originally, you know, wanted to do like a glamorized and intentional video that challenged the ideas of masculinity. And they were going to shoot this wrestling sequence with that. But I think they realized it felt grittier and it felt better just kind of observing these men and these boys, you know, getting ready and wrestling, which was, I thought, it felt very raw. It felt really like you were immersed into this world that I'd never seen and I didn't know existed. And I think the idea of, you know, being kind of okay and not trying to hide against, like, not hide, the idea of featuring these male bodies is also just, again, brilliant.
So my review, I mean my rating, yeah, I gave you my review. I'm going to give it 3.75 stars.
Ooh, thank you.
That's out of four stars, people.
Out of four stars, right. Star Search rules, four stars.
So yeah, I just love it. Love the song, really love the video, and hopefully this means a new album.
I hope so. I haven't heard much else about what he's up to. I mean, the man, he's up to a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very busy, and I hope he puts out some more music soon, because I need a new coat. No, kidding.
Remember the days when you didn't want one of your favorite actors to do music because it wasn't that great? Like, Eddie Murphy, thank you for My Girl Wants to Party All the Time, but please stop. But it's stop. I don't know. I feel like today you've got some legit people who are legitimately great at both acting and music. I'm thinking about Janelle Monáe, and now I'm thinking about Riz Ahmed. I don't know. Other examples, probably. So, yeah. So
Donald Glover, yeah.
Donald Glover, yes. So these polymaths are, yeah, they're real.
They are. They are. I think they grew up in a world where they saw some of those things fail. So they probably really tried harder and to hone into that skill and make sure that they didn't, right? That they were as rehearsed and as, you know, as and can keep it true to themselves. And if I think that's the thing. If you feel like it's true to yourself and if you really own that talent and really put it out there, I think there will be an audience for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Quick side note. I was in Los Angeles for a few weeks, as you are still in Los Angeles. And I had this amazing, amazing, amazing evening where Tunde Adebempe, who is the lead singer of TV on the Radio, he is also an artist, which I didn't really know. I know that he's created a couple of animated music videos for the group, but he's actually a really great artist. He paints in acrylic, watercolor, oils. He draws pen, ink, pencil. He's really talented, and he had an art show, and he sang about four songs solo at the art show, and then you kind of got to walk around this gallery and see his art. And it was, again, like this experience of someone putting themselves out there and basically saying, I know you know me as a singer. I also want to share my art. You know, Janelle Monáe, I know you know me as a music artist. I want to share my attempt at acting, success at acting, also with Riz Ahmed. So, yeah, I really appreciate those artists who have that talent and then really put themselves on the line and say, okay, now I'm going to make myself vulnerable in this way as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you really enjoyed this big sell, and I am so curious to hear what your big sell is.
Well, my big sell is a little sad because, as we know, this week, Stan Lee, creator of Worlds, right, just created every single superhero you've paid $15 to see in the past 10 years on screen passed away at a really at an age that you have to celebrate, right? I mean, he passed away in his 90s. I think he was 95.
Yeah.
And, you know, outpouring of tweets, obviously, from all of those great Marvel stars, Chris Evans and Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. I mean, everyone who's in a Marvel movie, Chris Hemsworth, people who've had a chance to work with him and be inspired by him, have tweeted really, really nice words of tribute. And so what I want to big sell to you, Amita, is really one of my, I think the person who he's one of my favorite writers about comic books. And I may have big sold something to you by him in the past. He wrote an article about online bullying and how there were online bullies against, is her name Kelly Tran?
Oh, the Kelly actress. Marie Tran, yes. Yes.
So, but he's this, his name is Abraham Reisman, and he writes for Vulture, and he wrote a great tribute thought piece on Stan Lee called Stan Lee Gave More Than He Took. And it's a nice tribute, but it actually also deals with maybe some of the criticisms that Stan Lee had and actually some of the stuff that's happened in the comic book world that isn't pretty. In this piece, Abraham Reisman really breaks it down, but it's essentially a tribute to Stan Lee. So I know that you enjoy the Marvel movies as well, Amita, and you've enjoyed a couple of the Netflix shows, or one Netflix show primarily. So I know that you that you might find this interesting. So I will share this in the show notes. Stan Lee gave more than he took.
Love it. Oh, thank you for doing that. I have been kind of just enveloped with work, and I happened to see that he had passed yesterday, and I was like, oh wow, like that, you know, that's a legend right there that gave us so much over the years. And I'm very curious to read this article for sure.
Great. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. And as you all know, if the big sell is over, that means that is it for us this week. But we would love to give a shout out. We have a couple of shout outs this week. Lauren, a.k.a. at iSteves, I hope I said that right. She tweeted that she's loving our new interview format. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. We appreciate that.
Yeah, we're loving it too. And another shout out to Offscreen Babble, who tweeted their enjoyment of our previous episode, which featured an interview with journalist Lori Tharps about depictions of interracial relationships on TV.
And to hear that episode or any of our previous interviews with showrunners, music supervisors, and directors of some of your favorite movies and TV shows, visit our official website at insidepoppodcast.com.
And stay in touch with us throughout the week on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. You can also like us on Facebook, search Inside Pop, and you can also find us on MaximumFun.org.
Until our next episode. You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Good.
Did that work?
Yeah, good delivery.
I really was channeling my inner Ferris Bueller.